You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
No city or country has ever made money from hosting the Olympics. The outflow from the public coffers is far greater than the public revenue created. It's a 17-day event that threatens to leave BC taxpayers with a huge debt. To examine some of the Olympic realities, we are going to speak now with Chris Shaw. He's on the line. He's the author of Five Ring Circus, Myths and Realities of the Olympic Games. Hi, Chris, and welcome to Red Eye.
Hi, Mordecai. I'm happy to be here.
In your book, you argue the Olympics are less about sports than they're really about real estate development. Could you expand that?
Sure. At the local level, they're completely about real estate development. And all you have to do is look at the projects that have been brought to the fore by the Olympics and the ones that were considered essential to getting the Olympics, which were a new convention center, which was not needed, the Sea to Sky upgrade, which really wasn't needed, but it suited the purposes of the developers who wanted to develop the whole strip for condo development, including in the Callahan. And the RAV line, which, again, while we need mass transit in our city, it was ill-considered and it was basically designed to create a mega project that the developers had long wanted. And so when you see all those things, and of course gentrification of the downtown east side, so these are all parts of what drives the local bid boosters each and every time in every city. In fact, it's remarkably similar when you look at the history of other cities, whether it's Sydney or Barcelona or Salt Lake or any of them. They all have the same sorts of development schemes. And for the IOC, it's all about television marketing. They are basically selling the television rights to the highest bidders and making astonishing amount of money that's all tax-free.
On the construction real estate development, is there also possibility to connect the personal businesses of the people who are running the IOC with development?
Well, the IOC members have somewhat conflicted interests in this. One case we document was where the technical team was in Vancouver in March 2003 to visit the different venues, and the head of the technical team, Gerhard Heiberg, had also been a director of a giant oil and gas exploration company, a Norwegian company called Aker Kvaerner. And he went off skiing alone with Jean Chrétien, and Jean Chrétien's daughter is married into the Desmarais family of Ontario, who had to head up Power Corporation. And about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after that little skiing jaunt, the Power Corporation, through one of its totally owned subsidiaries in Europe called Totalfina Elf, gave a huge contract for oil and gas exploration to Aker Kvaerner. So there was a $300 million gift, as far as we can tell. That was a trade-off for something. So yes, so the IOC members can do very, very well, and they are treated like royalty when they come to visit. They pay for nothing. The taxpayers sop up all the bills for them. And again, they pay no taxes anywhere on the planet. They don't even pay taxes in Switzerland. They are taxed. They're considered a non-profit organization, although they make well over $1 billion a year.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation the Callahan Valley. What's the significance of that?
Well, the Callahan had been in developer sites for a long time. The Callahan, the initial, it had been logged selectively over the years, and so it wasn't completely untouched, but the logging was not extensive, and it was the upper part of the valley was a provincial park. What's happened since then, since the games were awarded, in the original bid book, called for basically making a four-season resort there, complete with golf courses and fancy hotels and the whole thing, and ultimately to develop the valley into an alternative Whistler. And they've largely accomplished that. If you go into the valley now, you can see that extensive areas have been logged. The calculation of how many trees have come down is probably 80,000 or more. And if they continue to do the logging for the so-called legacy trails, where they carve up the valley into smaller parcels, there'll be a lot more logging going on. They've already given some of the land in the valley as a trade-off to First Nations bands to develop as a golf course. And they've always been talking about permanent housing there. And the valley is now crisscrossed by these Nordic trails that are actually asphalt underneath. So there's no way that the valley is wild anymore. So they've taken really a gem, and they've made another resort out of it. And ultimately, that will continue in accelerated pace after the games. It will continue to, more and more of it will fall into the private sector and find its way into the real estate market.
Now, the IOC says that it would never award the Olympics to a city unless there was a significant public sector commitment. On the surface, that sounds as though the public is in the driver's seat, but you think quite otherwise.
Well, actually, what they mean by that is they want an unsecured line of credit. They basically want you to, you know, open up your checkbook and sign off on the checks and leave it on the table for the developers to go crazy with. And that's pretty much what's happened. And so what they're saying is they're not going to give it to a small city that doesn't have the money to cough up for all the venues and all the security costs. And these now, for most cities, extend into the multi-billion-dollar range. So, for example, we're estimating that Vancouver, and this is the public sector contribution, is pretty close to $6 billion, and that's just the money we know about. There's probably a lot more we don't know about. There's all kinds of in-kind contributions that you should add on. London for 2012 is well over budget. They are probably pushing $20 or $30 billion when all is said and done. Athens was pretty close to $20 billion. Beijing is estimated to be, by CBC, estimated to be $60 billion, although we'll never know. And Russia for Sochi for 2014, I mean, the gloves came off, and the government is just pouring money into developing what had been a world UNESCO-protected site in the mountains above Sochi. So the money is never small, and so they can only give it to places that where the citizenry is going to be compliant and is going to just open up their pocketbooks.
Of course, there's the popular argument put forward by the advocates of the Olympics. There's economic benefits for the people who host the Olympics.
Well, there are some jobs created, that's true, and though many of them are during the 17 days. There are certainly construction jobs, but I guess I would argue that the construction jobs that are created, especially in an economy like we're heading into with the subprime collapse in the States, that building a real estate, you know, building a real estate market as your sole economic engine is really a foolish thing to do, and we're going to see the outcome of that. And even if it were true that those jobs were worthwhile, I would make two arguments. One, the amount of money that goes back into Treasury from the taxes paid by the workers is a tiny fraction of what the overall thing cost. And the second thing, I don't really think you can build an economy based on a it's like building a forest with one kind of tree, and the outcome is as predictable as what I'm looking at right now, which is, you know, the collapse of the forest here in the interior, and that's what we're heading for in Vancouver. Created this artificial boom, and we're expecting that to drive our economy into the future, and it simply won't happen. I mean, the fact is, if we really wanted sustainable construction jobs, we need more hospitals and other public infrastructure that we're all going to use, not a new convention center that I guarantee I'll never use, and probably you won't either, and most of your listeners won't. So it's really, the construction is really focused on a very elite group of people who have found it a magic way to get us to pay for it.
Now, one of the topics least discussed about the Olympics is security. Let's look at costs first. What are realistically the costs that are being put into quote-unquote security for the Olympics?
Well, I have to preface my remarks by saying the Olympic organizers outright lied back in 2002, 2003, and they made up a number that was utterly fictitious. And that three levels of government, that means city, provincial, and federal, have been lying about it ever since. The original bid book said it was going to cost Vancouver and the different government levels of government $175 million, and that was just a complete filthy lie, because we look back in time. I have a graph in my book actually that shows this, and it shows that there hasn't been a city since for decades that's come in that low. Everything after September 11, 2001 has been in the multi-hundred million dollar range. Salt Lake City came in at $350 million approximately. Torino came in at $1.4 billion. Athens was $1.5 billion. London is projected $1.7 billion. So the idea that somehow we're going to go back to something we haven't seen for 20 years is absurd. And we actually have a letter in our possession that we obtained through access to information, in which the then commissioner of the RCMP, a guy named Bud Mercer, Rob Harriman, correction, who was then the head of the Vancouver 2010 Integrated Security Unit, is writing to Annette Antoniak, who's the BC chair of the Olympic Commission, and he basically tells her that the numbers that the $175 million was derived without any consultation whatsoever with the RCMP. And of course, the big corporation in VanEck had been claiming that the RCMP gave them this number and it wasn't their fault. So they just outright lied to the public. So we're going to see that they're going to have to spend the money. They're going to spend a lot of money. We'll never know how much exactly it is. It's going to militarize our city rather dramatically. And it's going to involve thousands of police, thousands of soldiers, thousands of private security guards, and we're going to pay for it.
Now let's go into that aspect of who's going to be here and what role does the U.S. military play in the Olympic security?
Well, the U.S. military is obviously taking the view that anything that happens in North America is their business. And there have been a series of exercises that Canadians have participated in and will continue to participate in called Exercise Top Off. Bob Mackin from 24 Hours obtained some documents from the website of Homeland Security and basically was able to show that these exercises are ongoing. And the Americans and the Canadians, this is something that I think some of your listeners know, maybe not all, that some months ago, the head of our Canada command signed an agreement with the head of Northern Command, the American North American Command, in which the militaries of either country have the ability to cross or to come to the aid of each other under various circumstances. And the listed circumstances could be pandemics, they could be terrorist acts, they could be civil unrest, they could be basically anything they wanted to declare. So the idea that American soldiers will be coming is actually probably not too outrageous an idea. Now, where they'll put them and under what circumstances, or if they'll just have them across the border, we don't know. But we can expect that American military personnel will certainly be involved in the planning. We know Whatcom County, which is just to the south of us in Washington, has their own security budget of $73 million, which further puts the lie to the $175 million put out by VanEck. So the idea that Canadians and American with American backup, either on the ground or nearby, will be part of 2010 security is pretty likely. I mean, Americans were involved in Sydney. Americans were heavily involved in Athens. Americans are heavily involved in some aspects of Beijing, certainly for their own athletes. So we can certainly expect to see the same thing in Vancouver.
And would they take control of command of the military operations?
I doubt if they would take control, but they also, when they go into someone else's country, they don't integrate into that country's chain of command. They operate independently. And so they're not going to be under Canadian military authority if they're here at all. So we don't know exactly what the circumstances are going to be, but we do know from past behaviors that they don't come under foreign control. They just don't allow their soldiers to do that. And they also, the other thing that this is going to add to the security cost, they also tend to send you a bill at the end of it. So it's not going to be free. It's not like they're going to deploy across the border just as our friendly neighbors to help us out. If they come, there's going to be another bill for Canadian taxpayers.
Well, thank you very much for taking time this morning, Chris.
My pleasure, Morgan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Chris Shaw. He's the author of Five Ring Circus, The Myths and Realities of the Olympic Games. It's published by New Society Publications. And Chris is also the media spokesperson for the Workless Party and its media and policy chair.